We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. And big show coming up because there's a big basketball game tonight. Carolina in Iowa City as part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge to face Iowa. Iowa has one of the best players in the nation, Luka Garza. Friends call him Luke. And we'll preview that matchup. Good old veteran team for the Hawkeyes. We'll talk about that. You're going to hear our conversation with former Tar Heel Steve Bucknall. Adam, we went across the pond to speak to Steve Bucknall. Actually, we just used Skype, I think.
Is Iowa a good old veteran team? Or are they a good old veteran
both,
team?
Both of them. Ah, look at that good old team over there. They're both good and good old. So Tar Heels have their hands full.
That's even more concerning.
Yes. So we'll talk about that matchup, as we said, the Steve Bucknall interview, plus Adam has a list and more. Adam, what's up?
Busy time.
This really is. This is week three of a busy three-week stretch with football and basketball both playing, basketball playing on the road a bunch. Just a lot of activity going on between those two sports. So busy time of year. Plus, we're podding twice a week.
At least. This game tonight is frustrating from a virus perspective because you always look forward to going those different places and just seeing what it's like there. And I don't know about you, but I've never been to Carver Hawkeye Arena.
Yeah, no, never been there.
It was like when we went to Michigan or when the Tar Heels played at Illinois. The places that you don't often go, you like to see how they do things. What's that crowd really like? We're so accustomed to ACC crowds, and sometimes you go places that you've heard a lot about and you're kind of disappointed, quite frankly, and sometimes you go places and they're better than you were expecting. But I don't think it's going to be fair either way to judge Iowa on anything other than basketball, about sure. which I think they are very good.
Yeah, and Adam joined me on the Roy Williams radio show this week, and we talked some about Iowa there. And Adam, I think the conversation kind of carries over here of the main points is it is a veteran team that play a lot of guys who are older players. Coach Williams said they have seven starters back is the way that he said it, because seven guys who did start at different times last season, all returning for the Hawkeyes. Luka Garza has incredible numbers, 34 points, nearly 10 rebounds the field goal percentage on 76% from the field, including 5 of 8 from 3-point range. It is just, and they're averaging almost 100 points per game. It is just a really good team. Now, their schedule has not been good. You know, they've played North Carolina Central, they've played Southern, and they've played Western Illinois. So They haven't been tested like the Tar Heels will test them, but I also think this will be the stiffest test that the Tar Heels have had thus far, too.
I think this is where you're glad that you played in the Maui Invitational. It's not going to be a shock to your freshmen from a Carolina perspective to go out there against players as good as Iowa. You may not – I'm not sure that Texas was as deep as Iowa. Texas may be a little more athletic than Iowa, so you're getting challenged in a different way. Garza's numbers are absurd. I think he's still shooting over 80% on two-point shots, which is ridiculous. But Carolina, as has been well documented, has the bodies to roll out there against him, and we'll see how it goes. We know Garrison Brooks is a very good defender and a tough defender, so that's going to be a fun matchup. And this is the kind of game that Carolina won't play many more games in the ACC against a better team than what they're going to see tonight.
Iowa shooting, or Garza shooting 78.6% from two-point range.
I round that up to 80, yeah. Just like I did in school.
What a day for me to not have Lil Cassio. I left him at home by accident this morning, and I got to tell you, I have had to use that calculator app on my phone way too much for my liking today, Adam.
Is Lil Cassio getting jazzed for the road trip? Is that why he had to stay home?
I know I've said this before. I honestly, anytime I'm doing something and need Lil Cassio, I say it out loud. I go, oh, Lil Cassio, and I have to go get him. it's such an exciting moment where it's like, hey, all right, get to see my buddy.
It's like you're Harry Potter or something. Lil Cassio!
Lil Cassio! And then magic appears in the form of Lil Cassio for sure. Show brought to you in part by College Foundation of North Carolina. Visit cfnc.org for everything you need to plan, apply, and pay for college this application season. And it's now in an updated format. Again, cfnc.org. Adam, I do think your point about the Maui Invitational is a good one, that Carolina has already seen a bunch of good teams. There is the potential for the Tar Heels to lose this game, though, and, you know, 3-2 through five games doesn't sound great, but I feel like the Tar Heels have, understanding that could happen, I don't think that would be a fair representative of what the Tar Heels are.
3-2 doesn't sound great, but then you could call up Kentucky and ask if they'd switch.
Yeah, that's a good point. And like we talked about, and we talked about this, these younger teams are going to take some lumps here early on just because you haven't had the same amount of time.
If the Tar Heels do lose, Jones, I don't want you to worry. Jeff Goodman will tweet out that no one should be mad at Carolina for losing.
What was that?
A lot of malarkey.
Yeah.
There is that potential, but there's also the potential for a great road win early in the year against a really good team that's going to be probably a one or a two seed in the NCAA tournament. This is a chance for a resume-building non-conference win. And as we've seen two things. Number one, you don't get many chances for those. And number two, if you just get to play the game,
yep,
you've done a great thing.
Well, we've already seen a couple of these games not occurring.
This isn't a full ACC Big Ten challenge,
yeah,
Jones.
I wonder how they're going to officially present that trophy when we all know that it wasn't a full slate.
I will not be eating a full-size chocolate nut sundae if the ACC wins this challenge, which is the most important sporting event on the calendar.
So, as of us talking about it, or talking right now, State of Michigan... And who else? Louisville, Wisconsin?
Yes.
Already down. That's not what I'm talking about.
Can you just bring in the ACC team that wasn't going to play in the challenge and be like, all right, you're in, guys.
Yeah.
We thought you were out, but now you're in.
And Adam, I think, we discussed this when the schedule came out. And we're seeing it right now with the Tar Heels trying to fill this gap in the schedule where Elon was. It is tricky right now out there in schedule land.
Well, and I think you really do have to credit the Maui Invitational. They pulled that whole thing off with the eight teams that were supposed to be in the event. They put it in about as different a place as you can find from Maui.
Yep.
All eight teams came. All eight teams played three games. All eight teams went home healthy as far as we know.
Right.
I'm hard-pressed to think of many more events like that in college sports that have pulled that off, but they did it.
So, again, it is 7:30 tonight. We will be on the air radio-wise at 6:30. Adam, anything else from you for Carolina, Iowa coming up?
Garrison Brooks, status uncertain, has not gone through a full practice. But, look, we know Lil Gerb.
Yeah, he'll power through that. So, he rolled an ankle and then rolled the same one. That's right, against Texas?
Yes.
So, taking care of Lil Gerb for sure.
limited practice time post Asheville, but I just got a feeling that Rascal's going to be
well,
out there.
And he's going to be big in this game. I mean, we mentioned Garza, I think, and you talked about this on the radio show. I think Carolina being able to throw some different bodies at him could be beneficial.
I think most teams that go up against Garza, their big guy will get in foul trouble. I think one at least of Carolina's foul big guys will get in foul trouble, and then Roy Williams will just look over there and go, all right, Walker Kessler, take your five fouls out there and give it a shot. Carolina's got 20 fouls to go against Garza with. That's a big number.
New sponsor here on the pod, brought to you by Harris Teeter, assisting you with groceries this basketball season. Each week, one winner will receive free groceries for every assist through the Big Four Grocery Assist Sweepstakes. All right, Adam, here it comes. This is a tough one for me. HarrisTeeter.com. Look for the Grocery Assist Sweepstakes section to enter. I didn't do very well. That's hard. Sweepstakes section.
Do you go inside Harris Teeter, or do you pick them up outside?
We have, well, I'm a hybrid. I'm the hybrid scheduling model on that, Adam. But we have started doing the pickup for about the last year.
Yeah.
And I love it when it works.
Right.
But like yesterday, for example, we ended up only getting about half the groceries, and they had to deliver like 7 or 8 bags to our house later in the evening.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, certainly a difficult situation that you had to get through, but
it powered through it.
But it ended up okay. It sounds like the order them online. I like that. My wife doesn't like it because she likes to go in and see the things, and she always thinks of something that she didn't know she needed.
Now, do you, when they're putting them in the car, I'm always in the weird, like, should I get out? I always get out and help.
I don't feel right just popping the trunk and sitting there and like looking back at him like, how's that coming?
Right.
I feel like even if you don't assist, I feel like you have to like stand
show
there.
Show the effort. Yeah, like get out and be like, hey, yeah, I like how you put that rotisserie chicken right there.
I would help you if you were not a trained professional. I'm showing you that I'm capable of doing so, but I'm going to let you handle this. But if you just sit there, you look lazy.
Yeah, no, and aloof.
I can't coach effort.
I don't want that, yeah.
I can't coach effort, and if you're just going to sit there, I can't respect that.
All right, Steve Bucknall, Adam. This was a little bit kind of off the board. Steve living over in London, of course, a part of some great teams for the Tar Heels in the late 1980s, and maybe not a player that everybody knows, Adam, but I think they'll be interested in hearing about some of his journey at Carolina and, of course, living overseas as well, which is where he's from originally.
Has some really fun stories. How does someone in the mid-80s get from London to Chapel Hill? That's what we wanted to find out. I think we didn't even talk about this. I think he also coached Wes Miller when Wes Miller went overseas post-college, pre-coaching Wes Miller.
Our interview with Steve Bucknall and all our interviews here on the podcast brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. And they remind you that texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Trusted choice, Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down your phone. Let's have a what, Adam?
Hands-free NC.
Hands-free NC. To learn more, visit trustedchoice.com and find an agent near you. All right, let's get to our conversation with Steve Bucknall. Back, Adam has a list and more when we return here on the Carolina Insider.
Go ahead and get ready for Jones and I to be a little giddy today because our guest, number one, was on one of our favorite teams ever, the 86-87 Tar Heel team. Number two, played and played very well in one of our favorite games, the 1989 ACC championship win over Duke. And number three is one of those guys who went somewhere that you forever associate with him. And so whenever you say Governor Dummer Academy, I immediately think Steve Bucknall. Every single time. It doesn't, if the Queen went there, I would still think of Steve Bucknall. And Steve, nice enough to join us today from London. So, Steve Bucknall, thanks so much for giving us some time.
No, it's my pleasure to take part in this. Obviously, I'm a Carolina family, so anything I can do to stay in touch with everybody, I'm happy to do it. So, thank you for inviting me.
How does a youngster from England become wrapped up in the game of basketball as a youngster?
I guess I was just looking for something to do, really, something positive. I was always, I guess, into sports. I tried a number of different sports along with my friends, my schoolboy friends when we were young. Obviously, football, you guys call it soccer, was the first thing I started. Everybody played football where I lived, and played some cricket on the streets. I even tried rugby at one point, but generally I had a knack for sports. I realized that. I mean, we used to do many different, tried many different things in my school. I started off actually playing badminton. That really was my first love, badminton, when I was in primary school, which was about 10 years old, 11 years old. My head teacher was into badminton. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that, but anyway. I started playing badminton and went on to play other sports. And then I wasn't as good as I wanted to be. I always wanted to be good at something, I guess. I always wanted to be good at something. And every sport I tried, I always came along and there was somebody better than me, to be fair. And that used to get me upset. So I bounced around from sport to sport. I played at the schoolboy level, most of them. And then my PE teacher, who was a rugby player, very good rugby player at that, tapped me on the shoulders one day in the playground and said, I kind of think I found something you might like to do. And it was basketball. And took me in the gym. And I realized that he tapped about five or six guys on the shoulders because I wasn't the only one in the gym. So I guess he liked my size. You know, when you're young, you got a lot of testosterone, aggressive. He probably liked that. And he goes, well, you struggled at rugby, because I remember the week before I got thrown out the rugby match because I did an illegal tackle. So he said that wasn't for me. And he took me into the gym. And obviously, back then, I didn't know what basketball was. I knew about netball because my sister played netball. So I associated with netball. So the first thing I said, I'm not playing the girls' game. I remember that. And he's like, you wait and see. It's not a girls' game. So I went into the gym. And one of my other friends there, who was quite sporty, was there. And we got playing. And he thrashed me. He thrashed me. He really did. He really rang rings around me. And that really made me mad. But I still loved it. First time ever got thrashed and loved it. Because I felt that he only thrashed me because he's been playing longer than me, probably a couple weeks before. So anyway, as I do, I went to the gym by myself and started training and training. A few weeks later, I challenged him and just reversed that and haven't really stopped since, really. And then it was my passion. That's how I started.
What is netball? I don't know what netball is.
Netball is a girl predominantly played by females. There's a lot of limitations to the game. You can't dribble the ball. You can't go into certain areas. It's just a very boring version to me of basketball. And my sister was pretty good at school. She played at like regional level. And she was used to come home, we're talking about netball. And I'm like, well, it looks kind of slow to me and boring. I think the modern day netball is a little bit faster, but the rules still apply. You don't have the freedom. I'll tell you what's the worst thing about netball. You can't challenge the shot. You can't block a shot.
Yeah,
and that's why I wasn't interested. So somebody can, you know, get under the goal, the net, whatever they call it, and they can shoot, and you cannot do anything about it except look at them and raise your hands. So it wasn't for me.
Before we got a lot to talk about, but I want to ask you about one other thing that you said. You mentioned cricket. It seems like people love cricket, and America has just never put its arms around cricket. I don't really understand cricket. What is it about cricket that is so enticing to people who seem to love that sport?
To be fair, it's a Commonwealth game, isn't it? It's a game that the British brought to the colonies and introduced it. And my father is a West Indian. He's from Jamaica. So, you know, he was the one that really introduced it to me. And when I was growing up, I remember the West Indies team were one of the best teams in the world. In fact, they were for a number of years. So there wasn't a point where the West Indies wasn't on TV, especially when they were thrashing England, that my dad wouldn't come in from work and say, we're watching this. And that's how I got into it. I did find it very boring, But obviously, you know, my dad controlled the TV in the house at the time, so I had no choice.
So you've decided that you like thrashing people in basketball. How did how did that skill develop to the point that you started thinking, I might go to the United States to pursue this?
I don't think it was never on the cards for me. It was just a way to stay out of trouble. I liked it. I got to meet some new people. They liked it. And we were very competitive against each other. Obviously, you know, I'm competitive. You've done your research. And that's what it was about, really. It was a fun sport. I think the main thing was it wasn't outside. I mean, football was terrible. It didn't matter what the weather was. We had to go and play. So, that you know, this gave me a release to go inside. And I just kept playing. People told me I was half decent. And on the court, you know, your physical prowess pretty much explains to you that you're not bad. You're getting all the rebounds. You're pretty aggressive. You're faster than everybody. You've got good timing. And you figure, why not? So people told me to go to a club. It was really when I went to this big youth club who had one of the top teams in the country, had a tradition of winning trophies and developing international players. That's when I knew that there's a possibility of me doing something. Didn't know if it was going to be the States, but once you get invited, it was called the Crystal Palace Basketball Club. Once you got invited there, people start to take notice. The funny thing is when I went there, I wasn't very good compared to the other players. These were some of the best players in the area, in London. And I could see that they were a lot more skilled than me, had a lot more basketball IQ. And again, that just drove me to reach their level and their standard. Once I got to their standard, obviously you're surrounding yourself around basketball. You're talking to people who know basketball, and they kept talking about America. America is the place to be. As far as I know, I didn't know anything about America. I knew about the Harlem Globetrotters because, you know, we went to see them one time, but it wasn't for me, the Harlem Globetrotters, what they were doing. But anyway, I said, why not? I knew there was another side to basketball, and I learned it at that club. I think for me, it was watching the men's play. I think that's what really got me excited about the game. Watching the men's play, watching the men's practice, and watching the imports from America play. They were just head and heels above everybody else. And I remember Alton Bird. Alton Bird was, I think he was voted the under six foot best player in America from Colombia. I mean, just a magician with the ball, just really a general out there controlling tempo, making the plays. And they had another guy called Bob Roma. I don't remember too much about him. I just remember he was an aggressive guy, about 6'8", and you know he just scored by his will and tenacity. And those two combined with the other players around him just showed me another side of basketball that I had no idea exist. And got talking to them often on the court, and you know they tell you where they're from. And they say America is where the best basketball is played. So obviously, after having that conversation with some of the senior players and my teammates, I was like, yeah, if I could ever go there, that would be a dream.
I want to get to how you made your way to Carolina and how that relationship started, and I want to get to that in a second. But you mentioned your competitiveness. Yeah. I mean, you were a tough dude out there. You didn't mess with Steve Bucknell when you were on the court.
Well, you could mess with him, but you were going to lose.
It'd be a poor decision.
Yeah.
Was that something that has always been there? Did you find that level of competitiveness and toughness when you got into athletics? Where does that come from?
It comes from my father, really, my background. I mean, let's be honest. My father, you know, left his home in the Caribbean, came over to England and tried to find a better life. So he instilled that ethics of working hard and never giving up into me. I mean, also, I lived on the streets of London, which was a pretty tough place back then. So, you know, you had to stand your ground. You know the saying, either you stand up or you run away. I was always one of the ones that stood up. And I just carried that through into the sports, really.
So let me get to how the relationship with Carolina began. When did that start? How did that recruitment begin? Take us through that journey.
I mean, I had some success at Governor Dummer Academy. I guess some good success, and I had a lot of offers. You know, I did well. I went to 5-star basketball camp, and I in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, I believe, and I won the MVP. And all of a sudden, I had a mad rush of suitors coming after me to go to university. Carolina was always one of the ones in the back of the mind that I said, if I ever had an opportunity, I'd really take a look at that seriously. That's probably because they had a European visit, and I heard them on the radio. I think it was Michael Jordan, James Worthy was in Europe, and they were doing something. And that's the first I ever heard of North Carolina, but that was, you know, years before. So anyway, I used to watch them play in school. Amazing teams, of course, you know that. Amazing pedigree, amazing coach, amazing program. Everybody talked about it. I didn't even think I was at that level, if you really want to be serious. I didn't think I was at that level. But so I remember I was at a AAU tournament. And, yeah, I was still high up there in the rankings, had lots of offers. But I remember one particular afternoon, Leo Papil, who was, I think he was IAU head coach. He ended up being a general manager or something with the Boston Celtics later on. You know, great, great guy, Italian guy. He used to come and pick me up at school. And I remember he said, oh, Carolina is in the house or something to that. It's Carolina's here. So all of a sudden my heart jumped. He goes, Carolina's here to watch the game. I didn't know it was for me, but I heard Carolina was in the house. And I remember the AAU game. All of a sudden my heart started to beat faster. I took a peek outside, but I didn't know the coaches at all. I didn't know who the coaches were. I only seen them on TV. Not sure that I paid much attention. Obviously, I knew Dean Smith, but I don't think he was there. So anyway, I go out there to warm up, and I really warm up. I guess it was normal, but obviously you put a little extra into it, trying to get ready for the game. So did my warm up. Game started. Two plays later, something happened. I fell on the floor and hit my head and was taken out the game. Now, they had to drag me out the game. I remember I didn't want to come out the game, but you know, I didn't know how many fingers were up. I didn't know where I was. So they took me out the game. I was really upset, obviously. I wanted to perform. I desperately wanted to perform in front of the Carolina coaching staff, whoever was there at the time. No one. I never knew. A few weeks later, I get a letter from Coach Guthridge, and he says, introduce himself, I'm Coach Guthridge, you know, I came to watch you the other day, you know, it was too bad you didn't play, but I really liked the way you warmed up. I really liked the way you warmed up, and, you know, we'd like to keep in touch with you, blah, 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 you know, the recruiting thing, and that was my introduction to Carolina. Funny story, very funny story for me. And then I found out that Coach Guthridge never went recruiting. I mean, I think he stopped recruiting at the time when he found me. And it was a running joke that they're like, oh, you'll never get anybody. You know, it was like, you go out there, you'll never get anybody. And he brings me back. And they obviously gives him some kudos in the end. But, you know, it was like a chance meeting and just happened to be Coach Guthridge, who had probably put down his recruiting boots going out there on the road for the last decade, and then he went out and found me. Funny.
That's how good Coach Guthridge was. He could get the guys who only played two plays in the game. All he's got to do is see the warm-ups.
Yeah, he definitely was that good. He definitely was that good, and that was the start of a relationship with him that was special, to be fair, because once, you know, the guy that recruits you is always special. So, yeah.
You mentioned... You mentioned growing up on the streets of London. When you get to Chapel Hill, what are the cultural non-basketball differences that you lived through as you were getting adjusted to Chapel Hill?
Well, first of all, I had to get adjusted to Governor Dummer. I mean, I came from the streets and was slap bang into a boarding school with kids who were paying back then 30 grand a term or whatever, 30 grand for the year. So that was my biggest shock, to be fair. You know, obviously, the diversity wasn't there back then, but I did have some people around me that, you know, were really close, and I got treated, I got treated excellently. So I was kind of used to that. The thing about Carolina for me was the size. I came from a small high school with about 300 people, and I knew everybody there and the teachers. All of a sudden, I'm slap bang in a what, 20,000 campus, everybody running wild, freedom, which we didn't have in boarding school. So that was the shock. That was the biggest shock for me, is the size of the campus and just the number of different people there, and how sports was just elevated, to be fair.
Adam mentioned when he was introducing you that you're a part of some great teams at Carolina. There were some some knockdown dragout games during that time period, that 89 championship, which we'll get to in just a second. But from the actual basketball standpoint, what stood out to you during your time at Carolina, whether it's a teammate or something you learned from Coach Smith or a game or anything? Was there something from the actual basketball part that has stuck with you?
I think for me, it's just sacrifice. And I think a lot of players in that era, you know, a lot of us had to sacrifice our game for the good of the team. And Coach Smith instilled that, you know, no one's bigger than the team. And I saw many players who I felt could have maybe went to other programs and did well, actually sacrifice, you know, 10, 20 points to come to Carolina, understanding that there's going to be some very good players around you, probably better than you, you know, who are also all Americans, who also had ambitions of doing whatever. And Coach Smith had the ability to bring those characters together, those young men together, and to gel them into great teams. And that's what I remember. I remember coming in as a cocky freshman thinking, yeah, I'm going to rule the world. And then, you know, after you get dunked on a few times in practice and, you know, coach makes you do extra little bit of running, you realize that, you know what, if you want to be successful here, you got to work within the parameters of what coach gives you and work together as a team so we can be successful.
And then you were very successful, as Jones said, on some great teams. The first team I always think of is that 87 team that went undefeated in the ACC. What was it about that group that was so good, even at that high level at which they were playing?
Well, I think we had leadership. I mean, besides the quality of players we had and the quality of coaching staff and everything else, we had leaders on that team. We had experienced players who just wouldn't say no, didn't want to lose. Didn't want to lose, and I think we did. That was bred by a coach, started from coach, and it went right through to the team. We're many occasions we were on the ropes. I remember a few games, but we were always able to come back. That was probably the best team I played on. If we didn't have the injuries, we probably would have won it all. But you know, that's another story. But you know, it was a great pleasure to be on that team and actually watch some of those games from the bench. But I mean, you know, playing with some of those guys was incredible, but that was really a close unit of players who had ability, players who believed in the system, and players who really worked down hard. I'm talking like coach now, darn hard, yeah. So, yeah, that was a great time there.
All right, we've mentioned the 89 ACC championship game in passing a couple of times. It is, I still think today kind of has gone down in Carolina lore as one of the most physical games that's ever been played for Tar Heel basketball. For those who are listening who don't know, it's Carolina Duke ACC championship in Atlanta. Steve played a big role in that, including a big three-point play late in the game that helped the Tar Heels to victory. Take us through that game and what it was like being out on the court for that particular matchup.
That was a slugfest, to be fair. That was a slug. That was payback. I mean, for me personally, you know, they beat us the year before. They beat us at home, my senior game. And generally, we just didn't like Duke, as you know. We just didn't like them. And we had some great rivalries. We had some great tension with certain players on the court. I don't even know why I didn't like him. I just went in there and all of a sudden you don't like Duke. I'm like, what did they do?
Dude, we know. Hey, Steve, we know the feeling. We know exactly what you're saying.
We like, what did they do? I played with some of them on the McDonald's game. It seemed all right to me. But anyway, that rivalry was there. That season was a tough season. I know, like I said, personally, the team took it tough when they beat us the year before. And we weren't having it. I mean, we all came together and we said, this is the year we're going to overturn them. We're going to make sure that we settle some score, so to speak. I mean, Coach, even I remember first time I ever seen Coach look like he was a little bit nervous was that game. I think, as you said, it was a very physical game. Nobody gave quarter. And we knew it was going to go down to the end. I mean, we went back and forth at each other. I mean, it was a low-scoring game. That's what I remember. And you couldn't pick it. You couldn't pick it. Duke weren't hitting shots from outside. I don't think we were hitting shots from outside. Everything was going to the basket or free throws. I just remember it came. Coach called a timeout, I think, to settle us down. Probably about 4 or 5 minutes in the end of the game. And Coach always comes up with something that inspires you to go out there. I don't remember what it was, but I know we all got together again, the five on the court, and we were like, no, we're not going to lose this game. And I think we just rallied from there, and every player, from the last player on the bench to the managers, to played a part in that win somehow, psychologically or whether on the court. It was just a great feeling. And I think we wanted to do it for Coach, to be fair, because, you know, he was getting a little bit of stick, didn't win a tournament for a while, and he's had great teams year after year. And for some reason, I was a part of him, just go to these tournaments and we just didn't perform, or another team just played better on the night, just came together. And we were like, well, we've got to step our game up because, you know, we need to do this for Coach. We need to do this for all sorts of reasons, for Carolina pride. And I think that pushed us over the edge.
Now, you had a teammate on that team and for several years named J.R. Reed. And we're a few years after you guys were in Chapel Hill, but the Steve Bucknall, J.R. Reed in Chapel Hill stories still live on here in Chapel Hill. First, and you mentioned we've done our research. Oh, we've done more research than you even know. First of all, if you could take us back to a little restaurant called Slugs at the Pines and tell us about a particular maybe pregame meal during the 1988 ACC tournament and what transpired.
Well, I guess it'll never come out of your mind because JR will never let you forget it. That's just JR. I mean, JR and I were soulmates from the first time he came on campus. It just clicked with us, to be fair. It just clicked straight away. Obviously, there was some. There's always tension when you have kind of two alpha dogs trying to coexist. But anyway, I remember JR was a prankster. I'm sure you know that. He was a prankster, so I must have been late to one of the meals. Sometimes you don't want to be late with Coach Smith. Anyway, I got late. And I believe, if that's what you're talking about, because I'm sure there's a lot of other stories, but JR heated one of the cutleries, my cutlery. Is that the one you're talking about?
Oh, yes, yeah. Sir.
Yeah, so obviously he's probably sitting there giggling, as he does, while he's heating my knife or fork over a candle. So he must have done that, knowing JR, for about an hour or whatever it was, you know, as soon as he got there. So obviously when I go, then I pick it up. It burns my fingers, so I'm not having that. So, we get into some type of argument. Nothing was never going to happen, but obviously, as I said, we're two strong-headed guys in testosterone, and we get into it. And believe me, we've gotten to it even before that. We got into it, and then, you know, Coach said, if you really want to do something, go do something. But we never wanted to do anything. It was just a moment where the whole team was cracking up. You know, when you go in there, you're wondering why guys are looking and they can hardly swallow their food while they're looking, as you waiting for that moment when you pick up the cup. I guess on the other flip coin, I would like to be on the other side of it. But yeah, it was a funny moment when you look back of it. But it wasn't funny for me.
Now, our information is that we should also ask you about epic late night festivities at the Gimgul Castle on Rosemary Street.
Yeah, I try to keep it clean, I guess. But, yeah, I'll be honest, we like to go out, you know, but we always went out when it was appropriate, I guess. We always made sure we won a game. Probably that's what drove us to win games. But anyway, I got thrown out a couple of places, if I recall. So I ended up in some type of breeze block house round the back, near an unsavory place where we called it Gimgul Castle. And yeah, we used to invite our friends sometimes after going out to partake in a couple of sherbets or whatever, and maybe play some chess. So, you know, it got to be notorious. Yeah, Coach challenged us a few times on it. But, you know, to be fair, as long as we did the job on the court and we did the job in the classroom, and, you know, we didn't bring our team into any wrongdoings. It was just how we blew off steam back then. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but it's just how we blew off steam. And, you know, people forget that you're in school, you go into classes, you're under a lot of pressure. You're under a lot of scrutiny, not just from people around you, but also people that don't even know you. And then you've got your own aspirations and deals. So that was the way we let off steam. And obviously, you know, we enjoyed our sherbets and sitting down with our friends.
Now, did JR have to raise his game to keep up with you off the court? Did you have to mentor him to get him to be able to perform at that level at Gimgul Castle?
I don't think anybody can mentor JR. I mean, like I said, we hit it off. We hit it off. We had a vibe with each other. We had other guys, obviously, it wasn't just us. And as I said, we enjoy spending our time together when we were allowed. And that was one of the places, I think, obviously, we probably made too much noise. But at Gimgul Castle, that didn't seem to matter anymore.
What is your level of surprise that King Rice and J.R. Reed are currently leading a college basketball program at the Division I level?
Doesn't surprise me at all, to be fair. I mean, King was always, how can I put it, intelligent, good-looking, smooth-talking guy who could rally people around him. I think that's what you need when you're a coach, rally people around you. And I think from his grounding, from being in college, and also his experience in other programs, being a great recruiter for them, I'm not surprised that he's done well. I mean, bringing JR into the fold, that's probably a surprise for everybody. Wouldn't expect JR to take that route, but I'm glad he did, because, you know, playing with JR and King, you know, they were two of the most physical guys, toughest guys I've ever come across, but also intelligent. We weren't dummies when we played basketball, and we knew how to win. We knew how to win. We knew what it takes to be successful along with the rest of our teammates, and we were pretty good at that. So I could see him transferring those skills quite easily into a program.
Now, you have coached some as well in your post-Carolina life. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I did a one-year professional. A team in London didn't work out well because of probably the financials, with the backing wasn't there. And then I've got my own club, which I've built from nothing, really. We have 10 teams now. It's only age group teams, but it satisfies my need for basketball. Obviously, when the opportunity gets, and I think it's the right opportunity, I will look at maybe taking it to the senior level. But right now, I've had my success over in England. I've also coached national teams and had success at European tournaments, which nobody has had before. You know, I took a team of young men from the lower divisions into the upper divisions, and then we placed eighth in Europe, which before then had never been done. So I think it's just the tools that I learned, you know, the way of commanding players. I think it's important that they believe in you. I think it's important that they trust you. And this is what, you know, Carolina basketball kind of showed me. And all I did was transfer that into my coaching. You know, X's and O's and X's and O's. But, you know, if you don't trust your coach, you don't believe in his philosophy, you don't believe in your players, you don't believe in your teammates, to me, it doesn't matter how good you are. So I've tried to bring those aspects to my coaching and life, really.
When you left Carolina, you also played professional with the Lakers, which would have been at peak Showtime Lakers. James Worthy was there, Magic Johnson, a great team. What was that environment like with the Showtime Los Angeles Lakers?
Yeah, it's just like me to pick the best teams, Carolina and the Lakers. Those, you know, I had many other options, but I always go for the best one. At the time, the Lakers were the number one team, and I was in Boston. And every playoff, they used to go at it, Boston and Lakers. And, you know, I was always rooting for Lakers. Didn't tell too many people because I'm in Boston now, so they don't want to hear that. So it was like a common knowledge. This guy's in Boston and he loved the Lakers. So I started watching them then. It was a dream, you know, finally getting an opportunity to work out with Magic, James, AC Green, Cooper, some of the, you know, all-time greats. I mean, just watching them, you know, I like to watch and observe, and I just watch those guys, the way they handle themselves, the way they train, the way they look after themselves off the court. They really, really looked after themselves, and they instilled a lot of that into me. That's why I was able to play for like 17 years, from what I learned from the Lakers, to be fair. Even though I didn't play a lot, I was probably in the gym more than them while they were playing. I mean, that's what they instilled. You had to be a professional. I mean, as I said, playing against my idol, that was tough. That was similar to playing against Jordan, really. You had to buckle down and you had to forget how great they were and you had to make them compete. And I think that's probably why I made that team, because everybody wanted somebody to play against in practice. And I was always the one who put his hand up, say, I'll guard you. So it was a great experience. I don't regret choosing that route. I did have another route to choose, and it probably would have been more successful, but I wanted to play for my dream team, for the team that really inspired me and taught me a lot about, you know, basketball at that high level.
Last thing, at least for me, Steve, we hear so much about the Carolina basketball family. I'd be interested in how you have felt, if you have felt, that Carolina basketball family impact you and your life, both in Chapel Hill and then in after you left Carolina.
Yeah, I think the you know, when you first sign up, this is under Dean Smith era. This is what I know about. When you first sign up, you know, coach says we'll be there for you forever. The family will be there for you forever. And I can attest that that happened. I mean, Coach Smith came over to England to visit me in London. He also came to England with Coach Guthridge and did a camp. And I could always call on Coach Smith if I had any problems, if I wanted to run something by him. And that generation of my players, you know, we've kind of stayed in touch. In fact, we met about 3 years ago in Las Vegas, but we won't go there. What happened in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. But, you know, and I met up with some old teammates. I think even now, people who played for Coach Smith and played for other coaches, you know, we're on a WhatsApp group and everybody's communicating and expressing what they're doing and how we can work together to support Carolina and other good causes. So I've always felt it was a family. I think I'll always feel that way. Obviously, being so far away, it's not the same. But, you know, I chose to leave my country to go to America, and then I chose to come back. But Carolina will always be in my heart.
Again, we thank Steve Bucknall for his time. Hope you enjoyed that. Have a great guest coming up on Friday, too, by the way, and looking forward to that. On Friday, we'll preview big football matchup with Miami. We'll talk about whatever happens in Iowa City with basketball as well. And Adam didn't talk any football there at the beginning of the show. And, of course, we had the Rapid Reactions podcast. If you want to hear our detailed breakdown of the Western Carolina game from Saturday, that came out late that evening. But, Adam, certainly a big week for Carolina football. Big matchup here coming up with Miami.
I don't want to give any spoilers for Friday's pod, but on that pod, I want to ask you where you think this game falls in, like, in bigness in our awareness of Carolina football.
Okay.
It's one single game.
I have multiple days to think about it, so I'll get a good answer.
It's kind of like the 5-second challenge. Like, we can kind of mess around a little bit and give you some time.
Sure.
Like, say, about 72 hours.
Yeah. I tell you, Miami's good. I mean, did you see that 48-0 against Duke this past Saturday?
Well, and they do some things that have given the Tar Heels some troubles, but they've had some, like, that version of Miami is very impressive, but there have been some other versions of Miami also, and so you're not quite sure which version you're getting, but they're probably saying the same things about the Tar Heels.
Of course, they have a terrific quarterback in De'Arik King, Houston transfer. He is good and can really run in addition to using his arm effectively. Mack Brown said he thought it was the best defensive front that Carolina's going to play, and that's, of course, just a couple weeks after seeing Notre Dame, who had a terrific front seven that dominated that second half in the win over the Tar Heels. Both Coach Brown and Coach Longo talked about the defensive ends for Miami. One of those is Quincy Roche, who was at Temple last year. Carolina saw him in the bowl game. So it's going to be a big challenge, and I also think, Adam, it's interesting to see, I mean, it's hard to show a ton of growth in a couple of weeks, but how the offensive line does here after I think the O-line didn't perform as well as it wanted to in that second half against Notre Dame.
And I think hopefully you know what you feel like didn't work against the Irish, and you can correct that, but it may be that the Miami defensive front presents a little different kind of challenge. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see how Carolina accounts for that.
So we'll go even more in-depth. That was like a little preview nugget there.
Yeah.
A little in-depth nugget for you.
Skim the surface.
That's right. So we'll talk more about that coming up on Friday. A reminder that we are brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports, unchealthcare.org/sports. Adam, I know you have a list. Let's go.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
We don't know the outcome of this as we record, but Jones, I assume you saw Mack Brown's daughter, Catherine Ryan, won Jeopardy on Friday.
Yeah, and so I guess she made a big push at the end. Is that right? She ended up having a huge fourth quarter?
She had a rough start and wasn't very good after first Jeopardy, single Jeopardy, but double Jeopardy, she got a little better, and then she just put them away in final Jeopardy. I think she was the only one of the three contestants to get what is Malta as the final Jeopardy question.
What was the question? What was the answer? Wait, answer, question, whatever.
It was something about an island nation during World War II that absorbed Axis attacks.
I'm glad she was on there to answer that and not me.
A lot. The other two contestants, I think, both said Cyprus.
Yeah. What idiot would say Cyprus?
Yeah. I mean, come on, guys. We know that's an island nation, but not the correct island nation. So congratulations to her. And I assume she was also on the show on Monday night. But as of this, we haven't watched it. But I can assure you, I will be tuned in because I love Jeopardy when people I know are on it, which that's the first time ever. Ben Howell with a So Classy, as he sends us this tweet from Reddit College Football, so you know it's true. It says, although the Sun Bowl is canceled, Kellogg's is paying staffers as if the game were played and will donate $1 million to El Paso food banks.
Wow.
That is so classy.
I would expect nothing less from the Sun Bowl.
I agree. Let's see what else is here. Okay. Jones, we made a pact.
Yes, we did.
That we were going to watch. Now, I've got a bone to pick with you, sir.
Okay.
When you described the Christmas scavenger hunt to me on this podcast, I was left with the impression that you had watched roughly like the first hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, no, Adam.
And there were going to be 45 minutes left because the action you described.
Yeah, there's no way that that could only be in a short amount of time.
There's no way that could be contained in 15 minutes. And so I sat down with a couple of members of my family and I said, we'll start it where Jones stopped describing it. And this, you know, in like a half hour, we'll watch Shark Tank or whatever. Well, we still.
You were in for the night, sir.
We still had an hour 45 of Christmas scavenger hunt to go.
Yep.
Now, did you uphold your end of the pact?
I did and finished Christmas scavenger hunt on Friday night of this past weekend.
I think first we should. We were pretty close about what we said we thought was going to happen.
Right.
So you should hear that.
These two ex-love birds who've gone off divergent paths like Clemson and Florida State, they're forced together because by the rules of the town scavenger hunt, you must participate. They now will go on this scavenger hunt. But Adam, you know what I think they're going
to
find?
Yeah, I would like you to predict what you how you think this is going to turn out.
I think they're going to find love, Adam.
I think what's going to happen is they finish second in the scavenger hunt.
But
first place in love.
But first place in life.
And first place in Christmas cheer.
Ho, 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 ho. Merry Christmas.
That's uncanny.
Man, we're good.
Now, the only actor I knew in this movie was Tom Arnold.
Who was electric. Did you feel like Tom Arnold was kind of playing the role of the main character's dad? Like he took it a different direction? You know what I mean? Do you think he was like, you know what? I know how these Hallmark movies normally go. I'm going to take mine a little more intense, a little jittery, and really move quickly through my parts of the movie.
Well, that could be how versatile Tom Arnold is.
True.
Or it could be, my wife said, is Tom Arnold sick?
He did sound congested the entire movie.
Well, I told her, he's been married to Roseanne. Like, that takes a lot out of somebody.
Right.
And probably also some external substances. So I think that's difficult, but he was a wild card because he would pop up at random times.
Always very energetic, I think is the best way to put his appearances in the movie.
And there didn't seem to be a mean bone in that Tom Arnold's body.
He just wanted his daughter to be happy, and he loves Christmas, and he loves scavenger hunts.
There were a few details about what was going on that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Like what? So in one of the challenges, they had to build a snowman.
By the way, were they the lamest challenges of all time?
Well, and
I thought everyone was a baby could answer it.
But they acted like they had like solved the Rosetta Stone when they figured it out. Like, this is build a snowman.
He's talking about Santa Claus. Wow, good job there, Columbo.
Well, so for the build a snowman one, there's snow everywhere. But to build the snowman, they had to go to the covered bridge.
Yeah.
Why did they do that? Why didn't they just go right outside Town Hall?
That's where they had dug their initials in the bridge back when they were dating.
But that's not where it said to build the snowman.
Well, they wanted...
You're in a race against time.
They wanted a little bit of nostalgia. Well, they didn't take the snowman one very seriously, I thought. They wasted a lot of time on that one.
My wife was so upset that they didn't use a carrot for his nose.
Mm.
Yeah. She called foul on that.
The details that matter.
Yeah.
There was a lot of... showing the phone screen on TV.
Yeah.
And so, like, the way they would get all their clues for the scavenger hunt is somehow they would get them texted to them after they texted a photo they took achieving whatever the individual hunt item was.
Right.
And so you got a whole lot of that.
Yes. I did not understand. So the gentleman who they took the Christmas tree to.
Yes, okay. He apparently was a hermit. And never got out.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, he seemed to be perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
And he lived in town.
But they made a really big point about how he never goes out until the end, Adam, where...
When he had no problem going out.
He and others saved Christmas.
But, so why did he know, like, he knew nothing about the world.
Yeah, why? He was like, so, what's the news in town today?
That's exactly what he said. Like, you live two houses down from town hall. Why don't you wander down there and ask?
Yeah, you can probably get a quick update just by walking the dog or something.
And, like, he didn't know that our heroine had not been in town for a while.
Yeah, yeah. He asked her how she was doing or something, or how things were, and she was like, well, I hadn't been here in like 10 years, and he was blown away by it.
Yeah. So that was confusing.
What date do you think he thinks it is? Like, what year in his mind is it?
He's probably like, who do you think's going to be that president after George W. Bush? I'll be interested to see who they come up with. But I mean, like, and his house was fairly modern. Like, it wasn't like he was a hoarder who was locked in there.
Yeah, how's he getting those nice things for his house?
Well, we know he has money, James.
Yeah, that's right. I thought all in all, though, it satisfied what it needed to satisfy for a Hallmark Christmas movie. Made me feel good.
I'll tell you who I thought had the least important part of anyone in the movie.
Okay.
The friend's husband.
Oh, Jason. Yeah.
Jason,
yeah, he was
extraneous.
He was there to get people drinks.
Yep.
And to take, he was the one holding like the camera from time to time to take some photos. He was very much just kind of there to help out in any way possible. We don't need to know any backstory or hear you say anything really, other than maybe some one-off jovial lines about Christmas, but that's it.
But I still think he was a better actor than Logan.
Ooh, that's tough. I kind of liked Logan.
Logan, I'm not sure he knew what movie he was in.
I kind of liked Logan.
I think he thought he was in, like, Wall Street 4. And it was very surprised when he saw the final cut.
Man. What a great... I enjoyed it, though. Thank you, Christmas Scavenger Hunt. We made it happen. You, me, and Christmas.
And Tom Arnold.
And Tom Arnold.
Cameron Terrell sent us an email about superstitions.
Okay.
This goes back to when we were discussing the various things we do and don't do to ensure that the Tar Heels win, which we fully understand that we have complete and total control over.
Yep.
And Cameron said he shares the warm-up superstition.
Mm.
Cameron was a JV manager, and oftentimes I would find myself watching the best player or shooter on the other team, waiting for them to miss, before quickly looking away and trying to avert my eyes from that side of the court for the rest of warmups. That's tough to do.
Yeah, it is. I always get bummed when I just accidentally catch a glance and I see like three straight shots go in.
Yeah. Well, and this is sneaky when the other team does this, what Cameron's talking about. Sometimes they'd make one and then run into the locker room.
Mm, and I bet Cameron was in his own head when that would happen. He was like, oh, no. It's like when I hear Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus. It's a helpless feeling.
Cameron would wait for some other player to miss and hope that was a good enough replacement. Also shares Jones' random thoughts that the game will be decided based on some single event and some random possession.
Totally. I had a few of those in Asheville where I was like, man, if they hit a three here, that's okay. I think the Tar Heels are still going to win.
My dad is also the same way about stuff. During the Wake Forest game, my dad and I were watching together. Once Carolina went down 21 in the second half, he went to the bedroom and listened to it on the radio while I continued watching on the TV for
the rest
of the
game. There you go. Got to divide and conquer sometimes.
Obviously, the Tar Heels won, and as soon as they did, my dad came out of the bedroom saying, I did it, I did it.
good fine about Brian Reese and all, but guys, you can thank this one right here on the shoulders of old dad.
I think he was talking about the Wake Forest football game, but okay.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Wake Forest. I was like, man, I'm impressed that he threw out a random Wake Forest basketball game from like the early 90s. Yeah. I was impressed. That just shows you, Adam, that's how versatile Tar Heel fans are. He could have been talking about either one.
Yeah. As Cameron says, it's something everyone who's a serious sports fan understands.
So check it. His dad came out and said, say what you will about Sam Howell.
Yeah,
but this
right.
victory goes on the shoulders of old dad.
Something people who don't care that much just don't understand. I think that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
I really did think he was talking about Wake Forest from the 90s. I was like, man, did we? So in my head, I was like, we must have talked about that game and us doing something superstitious when we talked about superstitions But no, Cameron was just next level ahead with his story.
I think we actually did talk about that game when we were talking about it. That's how diverse this whole thing is.
Yeah.
That's all.
A reminder that we are brought to you in part by LS Tractor. That's the letter L, the letter S, Tractor. Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them, from normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. The website is lstractorusa.com. LSTractorUSA.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? So, big game coming up, Carolina, Iowa, 7:30 tonight. Again, we'll be on the air radio-wise at 6:30 for that one. Football, we did get the game time, Adam. It is 3:30 for Carolina and Miami, and that's an ABC broadcast, so another great opportunity for the Tar Heels on the national stage. I know we're not going to talk about Adam's teaser right now. We'll talk about it on the Friday show. But another big opportunity for the Tar Heels there. Adam, I, from the purely selfish point of view, it has the potential to be a challenging day, with basketball maybe happening that day. That was the date that Carolina had the Elon game originally scheduled for. So I guess we'll just have to wait. Do you have any breaking news on this front?
I do not.
No.
But we got an email or a tweet or something wanting to know if Carolina was trying to replace that game.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are. And in that same general amount of days window would be the logical place to put it, because Carolina won't play again after they play tonight against Iowa. If they don't play this coming weekend, they wouldn't play until at Ohio State and Cleveland on the 19th. So I think you can safely assume the Tar Heels would like to play between those two games.
Did you mention this and I zoned out that Stanford is here in Chapel Hill?
I think we lightly glossed across it.
Either on this or on the radio show that we did earlier. I think it's, a nice connection there, of course, between Coach Williams and Jared Haas, and Carolina very welcoming to allow Stanford to practice currently in the Smith Center. They added a game. I think it was an ad for them. They played, was it A&T, I think?
They beat A&T on Sunday.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I don't know that it is being discussed that they may play a game in the Smith Center. I don't really know how, if that is likely or not. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I bet you it is being discussed.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing that they are trying to figure it out. They don't want to sit here for a couple of weeks. And the whole thing is Stanford, the county that Stanford is in, has shut down any athletic competition or gatherings. And so Stanford didn't have anywhere to go practice. And so with school out, it was easy for them to just stay in North Carolina after being in Asheville and come over to Chapel Hill.
Did you see Dejon Davis throw the ball on
yes.
the ball rack? That was crazy.
That was insane. What was the bet? It said, like, Jared had said he was going to do something, or
I think Dejon Davis said he was going to throw it on the bottom rack.
Mm.
And so Jared said he would run a 33 if he could do it. Well, he threw it on the middle rack, which still
still
darn impressive. So Jared then said he would not do a 33, but he did do push-ups on his knuckles. Oh. A fair exchange.
Yeah, that's right. That's acceptable for Dejon. You have to reward the effort, even if it wasn't exactly what you wanted.
How many times would you have to throw the basketball from a long distance?
You know what's crazy is, and you know this from being around baseball a lot too, like the stuff that players for these individual sports, the stuff that they can do with their respective ball or whatever is crazy because they're around it so much. I mean, and they can just do weird stuff like that.
And they have a lot of downtime to practice these things that
right.
you and I have never even considered doing.
Yeah.
So Dejon Davis has probably done that a million times and made it 20.
I like it when the baseball guys get in a circle and they start doing the like crazy throwing the ball to each other, trying to get somebody to drop it. And, you know, they're throwing it all weird and making wild catches. I don't know what the name of that is, but
two ball.
Yeah, there you go. I like two ball. Does anybody play pepper anymore? Is that even around?
Well, a lot of times you'll run into the signs that say no pepper.
Yeah.
That seems discriminatory.
Yeah. So, very important topics, Adam, that we have.
Good job, Dejon Davis. Yeah. You're a veteran leader, and you can do crafty things with the basketball.
So ACC Big Ten Challenge.
Asterisk.
Yeah. Duke's playing Illinois?
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Right after the Tar Heels, I think.
Oh. So hopefully there'll be some good basketball for you to enjoy. That includes Carolina and Iowa. 7:30. Again, we're on the air at 6:30. Adam, anything before we get out of here?
No.
All right. Is this our first? Well, it's not our first British See You Later Big Grits, because Kerry and Abraham came in here. I think they count as expats.
Check it, Abram.
What did I say?
Abraham.
Oh, Abram and Kerry came in here. Excuse me, Abram. Came in here and did See You Later Big Grits.
That's right.
So I think they count.
That's right.
So for the second time, we'll have a British See You Later Big Grits as Steve Bucknall and the RZA will get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Steve Bucknall. See you, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.